Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast.
Coming to you from the Baseball America Podcast nook.
Controls, you're throwing strikes. The command is you're hitting the spot.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. I'm going to rant about this again because that's just stupid, John.
This is
so ridiculous. I'm tired of it.
If he was in the home run derby, I'd put him out of a decent chance of winning it against the big leaguers.
Surprised you could even hear us over the din of Ronnie McCabe's tape gun.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Play ball.
Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Clint Longnecker, I'm John Manuel. I want to thank Connor Glassy for the intro to our podcast. And great news here in the Baseball America offices, as Connor, obviously former employee at BA, went back home to Pacific Northwest, and a year later has taken a job as an area scout with the Cleveland Indians. I know you saw him out in Area Codes, Clint. We couldn't be happier for Connor, a guy who I know you worked with as an intern here. I got to work with him for 5 years. I think we both think pretty highly of Connor, besides his podcast intro editing skills. But just take a minute, just to throw Connor some congratulations. But pretty awesome news for Connor.
Yeah, congrats, Connor. It was really neat to be able to see him out at the Area Code games. That was the first time he got a chance to really huddle there with the rest of the Brain Trust with the Cleveland organization. And he was on cloud nine, getting a chance to learn under some of the national cross checkers and people of that ilk. So it was really fun. He's going to do a great job. He's a hardworking, conscientious, and research driven person. He's certainly going to be an asset of the organization.
That's a great way to put it. That's what they're getting. They're getting a thorough, hardworking, passionate, baseball-loving guy who is going to leave no stone unturned to try to get better. That's what he did for 5 years here. He just kept on getting better and better, and we're just happy, very happy for Connor. I'm fighting a cold today, so Clint's going to carry a lot of the load today, but we're going to talk summer amateur baseball on this edition of the Baseball America Podcast, kind of previewing the Under Armour All-America Baseball game, which is coming up Saturday from Wrigley Field. I got diverted. I'll be going up to Aberdeen this weekend for a Cal Ripken series, 12-year-olds, because, why not? 12 years old. But my son's almost 12. But Clint will be at Under Armour, so Clint, I'll be DVRing the game. I'll be missing Wrigley Field. Our old friend Jim Cowles will have the call on MLB Network, along with Paul Severino and company. So obviously people can watch that game. They got a chance to see, really, this month, really, Clint is the month that outside of college baseball, this is the month that has the most amateur baseball on television between all the little league hoo-ha, the Cal Ripken hoo-ha, and these high school showcases. It's the only time of year that high school baseball is ever on the national radar with the Perfect Game All-America Classic, formerly the Aflac game, everyone still calls it the Aflac game, out in San Diego, and then Under Armour game put on by Baseball Factory up at Wrigley Field. Why do you think that is, first off? This is an off-the-board question, but do you think there's a time coming where maybe NHSI, USA Baseball's high school tournament, could get on national television? Could that be on TV? Will we ever have high school baseball? Should we even have high school baseball on national TV? I know I roll my eyes when I see high school basketball or high school football on ESPNU myself, but ever going to be any high school baseball on there, you think?
I think the NHSI has a chance, especially since it has been so successful over its first 3 years. If it continues to build on that success, I could see ESPN3 certainly having a day where they come out and cover a few of the top games, getting a chance to feature, a half dozen of the future draft prospects, potential first rounders for that year, like there was this year.
And
the only thing you're battling with that time is the conference championships for basketball, and spilling right over into the NCAA tournament with the last week of March there.
That's a great point. What you kind of, I guess, would hope would be maybe MLB Network would, have the championship game. You do know coming into the weekend, you don't know who the championship teams are going to be, but you know that the game is going to be, whatever time. What is it, Saturday at 10 in the morning is when the championship game is. So tell me if there are any major league games that are in that window. So it would be great to, maybe preempt the Prime 9. That's our Prime 9. What's yours? But my son loves the Prime 9. He's 9. He loves Prime 9. But, that could be possible. That would be the only high school baseball game in the regular season that would ever be on. I can't see East Coast Showcase. I can't see Area Codes. I can't see PG National being on national TV. But so this is the week. Sunday, we had the PG game, Perfect Game Classic down in San Diego. Bookended now on Saturday. So this is really our first look at the nationally at the high school players in the class of 2015. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and touch a little bit also on the college class of 2015. Excuse me. With the caveat that Aaron Fitz doing our Cape Cod League top 30 prospects, still in the process of compiling that as the Cape playoffs grind to their conclusion. Clint, you throw in another one more point on the TV part before I dive into the class of 2015.
Yeah, we'll just say the area codes. ESPN3 covered that for one day, so that was great to have them out there for four straight games, getting to see a lot of the talent out there. And just to provide the specifics for the Under Armour game, it is going to be played this first night game in the history of the event. It's going to be played at 6:05 Central time, but the game will be broadcast on MLB Network, I believe, at 7 p.m. on Sunday. So everybody will get a chance to see it then. You know, I think a lot of people will go, you know, we'll be back in their homes by that point.
Gotcha. So
it'll be priority viewing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's on tape delay, but you've also got Wrigley Field. It's pretty hard to beat. That's one of the things that, to me, separates the game, is high school players getting to play in Wrigley Field and getting to see what a small clubhouse is like, because as opposed to, I'm sure, Petco is palatial. But let's
especially a night game. How many night games do they have annually? So it's special.
I do think it has a chance to be a special event for those players. I think these events, Under Armour's already tweeting out pictures of the players' lounge. We've been in that players' lounge, and how, I guess the word has to be swagged out. It is, because it really is. It's tricked out, and Perfect Game even gives a swag award at their game. It's a different generation of player. I'm 42 in my day. But that's kind of where we are, Clint. These games are – this is a week where these players get to get paraded around as the cream of the crop. And they are. And it looks like it's a pretty exciting high school class of player. It certainly feels like – and we're 10 months out. And maybe the college class will get a lot better once Brady Aiken and Jacob Nix settle on their 2015 playing destinations. Rumors about them playing in junior college baseball, not founded as of yet. You can see my Twitter feed at John Manuel BA for that. But so far, we don't quite have those two guys in the college class. And the college class seems fairly pedestrian, Clint. The high school class does not. High school class seems like it's got its strengths and weaknesses. But there's more excitement, I think, at this point in the scouting community, in the industry, for the high school class than there is for the college class, correct?
You know, I think it's early, but just given what we've seen on the Cape so far, that it is down a little bit compared to its historical standards, Team USA is as well, and maybe the best pitcher in the entire class hasn't even thrown yet, so that is an unknown.
Right.
You're right.
Michael Batchuel of Duke.
Yes, I believe that the depth is probably within the high school class. But in all fairness, this high school class is by most people is not viewed quite as talented as last year, and the depth of arms we had in last year's class was really truly special. You know, we knew that last year at the time, and I think just seeing the players this summer further reinforces that, because I think this is probably an above average group of high school pitchers compared to the last 5 years, but
right. Nothing
is going to compare to last year's class.
And let's put it this way, in that context, first of all, last year was like this epic year of high school velocity, just historic. It's difficult to quantify, but all the evidence that we do have is that it was a kind of a record setting, or just again, just a peak in terms of depth of velocity. Second of all, you mentioned Michael Machuella. This guy, I do think, and you detailed him better than anybody else is going to detail him from what he was doing this sophomore year. It was great stuff. Look for it on our website. I really love what you wrote about it. So if Michael Machuella, just say he's come next May, he's number one on our board, on the BA 500. His track record would be a guy who, coming into his junior season, has never thrown more than 58 innings in a season. Didn't pitch in the summer for USA or Cape, has thrown one complete game, which is probably a good thing, but I mean, like, you know, doesn't have the workload that you're usually looking for in a number one, just doesn't have the track record of the usual college number one first pick. Again, compare him to Carlos Rodon. The whole reason Carlos went third this year was track record. It wasn't what he did this spring.
Nope.
This spring, he was just pretty good. He wasn't the best. But it was track record and left-handedness that had him go as the top college player picked, and he signed the largest bonus. Why? Well, who he's represented by and track record. Those are the things. Machuella could be the top college prospect, and he doesn't have that track record. So I think it just tells you it's an unusual year.
Yes.
It's a thing that you, now you went to the Cape for a day, basically. You buzzed up and back for a Cape workout day at Fenway Park. You shadowed the college national team so much so they probably thought that you were an agent. And the players probably thought you worked for an agent. So you saw a lot of them. I saw a lot of them. Not as much as you, but I saw a lot of them. Let's touch on that real quick, Clint, in that the way that we've talked about it in the office is you could go position by position. And the 2013 college national team was a solid, maybe a tick above average college national team, but it wasn't. It wasn't 2003. No, 2004. That's the one I measure all those teams by. 2004 had Alex Gordon, Ryan Zimmerman. That was a great team. 2003 was also a great college national team. I'm sure there have been some since then, but I'm stuck in my period of time. And
yeah.
2003 team lost two games all summer. Had Jared Weaver and Houston Street, bookending Justin Verlander. Had some really nice pitching on that staff. 2000 team was another great team. Teixeira and Pryor led that college national team in 2000. But you're looking at 2013, Kyle Schwarber and Grayson Griner behind the plate. Schwarber wound up going fourth overall in the draft. You had Alex Bregman and Trey Turner in the middle infield. You had Michael Conforto in the outfield, Bradley Zimmer, all these first-round picks. You go at 2014 team, Clint, and basically at every spot around the diamond, the 2013 team I think we thought was a better team. And that includes Bregman 2013 to Bregman 2014. And then obviously the situation's a little flipped because this year's team finished in Cuba playing Cuba, whereas Cuba last year came here. But the U.S. swept Cuba last year. This year got swept in Havana. And that Cuban team last year, half that team transferred, I was about to say. Half that team has exited the island, stage north. So that was not as good of a Cuban team. It didn't feel like it was supposed to. It wasn't perceived as good of a Cuban team. And the U.S. college national team kind of got housed down there. So pretty ordinary college national team, I think, is a fair way to put it.
I would totally agree. And speaking with evaluators, that was exactly what they thought. And I think we might be giving short shrift to last year's class because last year, you know, it might have been a tick above average. But in putting in the context of that draft year,
yes,
it was well
right.
above average. There were 10 first-round picks. When I went back, I think I looked back like 7 or 8 years. It was an average of around 4 to 6
wow,
first-round picks.
So it was
and
really
last year
it
was 10. And, yeah, you look around. I mean, they had 4 first-rounders just on the mound. And then you look around the diamond, kind of like you said, just lining up position by position. In almost every spot, you're going to go with last year's class over this year's class.
Yeah.
And this year, you did have some bats, but there were a lot of players towards the bottom end of the defensive spectrum. Not necessarily – you didn't have Bradley Zimmer out there in center field, somebody you thought might have the ability to stay out there
right.
and provide a very wide skill set.
You're right. That's a great point. That's a great way to put it. So the strengths of this year's team – we'll touch on this from the college national team – you know, for me, that team got a lot more interesting when the Vanderbilt guys showed up.
Tremendously
so. It really made a big difference. It was a below-average team before those guys showed up. But when Brian Reynolds, who's not a class of 2015 draft prospect, he's 2016. So when Dansby Swanson and Carson Fulmer showed up, that really changed that team. Reynolds changed the team offensively because he can hit. But when you had Fulmer show up with that premium fastball – and Swanson show up as a middle-of-the-diamond player who could hit. That made a big difference. Now, did Swanson play any shortstop during the summer for the U.S. team that you saw?
Not that I saw. And in speaking with evaluators, that was what they wanted to see.
That's it.
You know, a lot of people were asking the question, who would you rather take, Bregman or Swanson? And everybody said, you know what? If we can just see Swanson on the other side of the bag and he's adequate there, we think that he might be the guy.
It's the unknowable right now. But that's the question going in. I think the most watched position on the college class in 2015 will be college shortstop, especially in the Southeastern Conference, because you got three guys off the top of my head. I'm sure there are others, but Mikey White at Alabama,
yeah.
plus Dansby Swanson making the move from second to short for Vanderbilt. He's the defending national championship team. He's the defending college World Series most outstanding player. Then you have Bregman, who, as we talked about, we heard the comment in that game I was at in Fayetteville where he made the play to the hole and the scout behind us goes, there's that Albuquerque swagger, you know. So he's got that Albuquerque swagger. That's one of my favorite lines. I'm going to go on a huge tangent here, but when I was at UNC back in the day, Henrik Rödl was a German player on the 1993 national championship team. And we wrote a feature about him having that Hussenstamm savvy. He was from Hussenstamm, Germany, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing correctly, but that's how I remember it. probably like Heusenstamm. But anyway, that sticks in my head. When I heard that scout say Albuquerque swagger, it's like, there's no such thing as Albuquerque swagger unless that's a line from Breaking Bad that I missed. You're the Breaking Bad expert. Is there Albuquerque swagger in there?
Not that I've heard. And just to throw another shortstop from the SEC into that mix, Richie Martin.
Yeah,
he really impressed quite a few people on the Cape, especially in the workout day. He
showed an athletic a little bit of grinder.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, like you said, so he showed some power in that workout up there?
He did. Yep, power to his pull side, athleticism, showed very, very smooth actions defensively, and had a plus run time in the 60. I'm not sure how it plays in games. I've not seen it in games. But, yeah, I think he probably deserves to be in that discussion.
And A.J. Simcox, Tennessee, another shortstop who was the top prospect in the Alaska League as a freshman.
Yep.
So that league is going to, I mean, big shock that scouts are going to flock to the SEC, but specifically in the middle of the diamond. And Swanson versus Bregman, to me, is kind of like where that starts. And those two players are awfully confident, but they're very different kinds of players. I mean, Alex Bregman, really, if you're going to comp him to a big leaguer, you are going to throw Dustin Pedroia on him. That's his most similar players. And I mean, what kind of comparisons did you hear on Swanson? I haven't asked a scout about it myself, but I'm not sure if a comp has come up with him.
No, honestly, I haven't heard one either. But just to go back to Bregman, his swing is just incredibly unique. I tried to ask that of a few evaluators. Can you think of a guy whose swing started like that and had the same load and the same swing path? And they were actually stumped. I don't know if they were just playing.
It's unique because his hands kind of almost drop. He's got like these low hands, right, in his swing. He's just a unique looking. Yeah. He's a unique player all the way around.
And even some of the national evaluators that I spoke with said that they're just having a tough time figuring out his tools as well, which, you know, you see a team for 5 straight days, you should be able to, you know, come out of that and have a pretty accurate depiction of what those tools are. But the run tool can play very differently,
right. Dependent
upon when you see him defensively. He's just a very tough guy to figure out. Extremely talented, but unique in many ways.
I remember you saying that, like, his times the first were very inconsistent. And, hey, the bottom line is he had a bad junior year. You look up what he did in SEC play this year. He didn't hit. And I think he hit like 220 in SEC play. So
and most of that was BABIP fueled. If I remember right, the strikeout and walk
ratios,
they improved actually significantly compared to his freshman year. But his BABIP, I think his freshman year was around 390, maybe 394, was around 315. So, again, very small sample size in college, talking about 200-some plate appearances, but didn't quite impact the baseball or did not find the grass that he did his freshman year.
Right. It seemed like it was a bad start, the way that just the guys I talked about. An extra small tidbit thrown in here is that now he's got an ex-big leaguer and an ex-area scout, and Andy Cannizzaro of the Yankees, who's recently been hired as the recruiting coordinator at LSU. But you got to imagine Andy is going to be involved in there. In the hitting, so I think it's
very well respected.
Very well respected, very well regarded guy, and you just give extra kudos to Palmieri. If you're looking for a coaching staff that is going to be respected in pro ball by pro teams, Palmieri's won a national championship. His best friend in the world is Jim Hendry. His dad, Demi Maneri, coached dozens of big leaguers at Miami-Dade. Palmieri's grown up in the game, coached at Notre Dame, obviously, Air Force, and now LSU. His resume is as long as, you know, I won't make a bad analogy. I thought I had one that was going to be Josh Norris related, but I'll leave him alone. But it's a long resume. And then Alan Dunn, former Cubs minor league pitching coach, as his pitching coach, who's already been involved with the Gossmans of the world and the other Aaron Nola, two high, you know, single-digit first-round picks in his short time there at LSU. And now Andy Cannizzaro joins the staff. So pretty impressive group there.
And we definitely look forward to breaking down the college class in its totality, getting Aaron on, where we'll probably go you know, more than an hour breaking down the Cape and, you know, all the other different big leagues.
The strength of the college national team was the middle infield, and I kind of want to transition that to the high school side, because it sounds like that's one of the weaknesses, I guess, right now, Clint, because the high school side, there is velocity, there is pitching, there are some athletes, but I hate to start on the negative side, but one of the things that we usually see is the high school athletes, especially the up-the-middle players, are there to make up for the lack of those kind of players at the college ranks, and in 2015 it could be the inverse.
Absolutely. I mean, the strength of the position player crop on the high school side truly is the outfielders. There's tremendous outfield depth. When I was lining up East Coast Pro top prospects of position players, 7 of the 10 were outfielders. And Brendan Rodgers is probably the top position player in the class. He entered it certainly in discussion with a few other guys, potentially Daz Cameron being one of them. But Brendan Rodgers, a shortstop out of Florida, had a tremendous East Coast Pro. First few days, he was finding his timing a little bit, but still had the strength and made enough contact, you know, to get a few hits. You know, his final two or three days, he was on everything. He had a home run to his pull side, and I think later that game, he had a ball that was on the warning track in dead center field at 400. You know, defensively, I think he's about 6 foot 190. He has longer hair, so some scouts have compared him to Brandon Crawford, that he looks like him, and then immediately when that comp is thrown out, like, he's a better hitter.
Right now.
Right now. More power, better hitting ability. He has a chance to be an offensive force and stay up the middle.
Is he a left-handed bat?
He's a right-handed hitter.
I wasn't sure if that was the mullet is why he gets the comp to Brandon Crawford, huh?
And that is actually one of the things that is up in this year's high school class as well, is long hair with Jonathan India, Ash Russell. If you saw any of the Perfect Game All-American Classic or will be watching the Under Armour game this weekend, you'll see quite a few players with long hair, a few of them pulled up in the samurai sort of look. So that's stock up for this class.
Stock up on the samurai look? Outstanding. We may differ on that one. The samurai look always makes me think of John Belushi when I date myself. Yeah. But I mean, that's awesome. But when you really could tell when you wrote about Brendan Rodgers in our Affleck preview, in our Under Armour preview, you could tell that you liked him. And it sounds like not only does he have some athletic ability and some hitting ability, but there's track record here too. This is not someone who's just busting out this summer.
Oh no, absolutely not. He was at the Tournament of Stars as an underclassman. I think last year when there were only, I think, six underclassmen there, and he stood out as a junior against the top competition in the entire country. And then flash forward to last fall, Florida had a great middle infield crop. You talk about the fifth overall pick with Nick Gordon, Forrest Wall, who went 35th overall and got $2.5 million, Milton
year.
Ramos.
A huge year in Florida last year.
It was
big
tremendous for position players. And he was out there at the Florida Diamond Club, and he fit in with that group. He was as good as any one of those guys, potentially, even though he was a year younger. And he is a little bit older for the class. I believe he's going to be 18 years old in 10 months. But he has track record, pedigree, and he had very easy power last year at Diamond Club. It's an easy swing, showed home run power and leverage. And then you saw the first few swings of Perfect Game National. All it took was, you know, just a brief little glimpse, and you're like, wow. His bat speed has improved by at least a full grade.
Wow.
He's hitting balls out to straightaway center down in Fort Myers. So just easy power and feel for the bat, natural feel for the game, a lot of fluidity defensively, great hands. I think a lot of times when there's a shortstop with his athletic ability, some people might say he might question his ability to stay there in the long term. But he's given every indication right now that he should at least be given the shot to remain there.
But that seems like that's going to be a defining question of whether this is a top five pick or a 6 to 10. I mean, but he has the potential, it sounds like, as a middle of the diamond player with offensive ability to be in those first five picks.
Tremendously.
Easily.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, but you did talk about that the rest of that middle infield class is kind of, like we said, softer. But the outfielders, it sounds like, are where the excitement is in this high school class. I think last year we have two returning players, two guys who played in the Under Armour game last year as underclassmen, coming back as rising seniors, and Daz Cameron and Ryan Johnson. Ryan Johnson, of course, a favorite of ours because it's the same name as our former advertising executive, Ryan Johnson, who played at Wake Forest. So one RJ to the other, we're always going to be fans of RJ. But you also have Daz Cameron. You have a guy who kind of has been on the radar for a year or so. I guess at this time last year, Clint, you would have said that Daz Cameron was the top guy in the class of 2015.
Yeah.
He may still wind up there. May not be there as of this moment. It's like it's Rodgers for you and for most evaluators.
Yes, most evaluators.
But Daz Cameron is still a pretty dazzling potential power-speed combination. Is he still the top outfielder in this class, or has he got so much competition that it's undetermined at this time?
You know, I think that there's a big group in there at the top, and he's certainly in that grouping and could certainly emerge. The thing with Daz Cameron is he doesn't have quite the tools profile that many expected that he would have. As John mentioned, he's been known for a few years on the national scene, certainly because of his father and because he was just a very good player at a very young age. Showed up at Jupiter as a freshman.
He's almost a victim of his own success in some ways, isn't he? That he may have peaked in there. In some scouts' minds, he hasn't gotten a lot better since I saw him last summer.
Yes. Right? Yeah, no, I think that's extremely fair. And he does not have the tools, but he has the instincts. You know, some of the scouts have said, you know, he maybe not have a true six as far as a scouting profile, but others think that he has the ability to potentially be, you know, a plus hitter down the road. He didn't show that at East Coast Pro. He was 1-for-12, I believe, in his East Coast Pro. Had a lot of ground outs to the left side, a lot of pop-ups to the right side.
He was just seeing a lot of low speed. But so he was just seeing a lot of low spin rate fastballs. Is that what?
That very well could
have been reading my TrackMan data. Been trying to digest my TrackMan data. I'm sorry to have interrupted you for that, but 1-for-12 showing at East Coast Pro, that's not going to push you to the top of a crowded class of athletic outfielders.
Absolutely, and he has plus speed underway. He doesn't play as plus out of the box. Probably 50 or 55 out of the box. He ranges very well in center field. But it's not quite the Byron Buxton or some of these other premier athletes that we've seen from Georgia in the last decade who have that true center field profile.
And it's not his dad. I mean, like, if you're a scout, you're comparing him to his dad. And that's a pretty high bar for the son to have to surmount when it comes to defense. A couple of the position players, I guess, that I wrote down, like, and I was really focusing more on on the pitchers. But Kyle Tucker seems like he's another outfielder who's maybe not more the athletic, but he stood out to me just because I'm familiar with his older brother, Preston. Preston Tucker, a longtime Aaron Fitt fave. I believe Aaron said that Preston Tucker was going to be the next Pedro Alvarez. And he's actually had a better pro career than I want to give him credit for because I don't want Aaron to be right. But Preston Tucker's been pretty good in the Astros organization. He's in AAA, going to be a big leaguer. Kyle Tucker, sounds like he's got a chance to be a big leaguer too. Pretty interesting bat, but a completely different profile than his big brother.
Tremendously so. Yeah, he's a left-handed hitting outfielder from Florida, and he's going to be one of the more polarizing players of the entire class. He was billed potentially coming into the summer as maybe the top pure hit tool in the entire class. If I remember it, granted, these are high school stats, but these are on the extreme ends where you actually tend to take notice. He had 9 home runs and 4 strikeouts against very good competition in the Tampa area. He was being, you know, billed as potentially one of the top hitters to come out of Florida, you know, in the last decade, if not longer. And he got to PG National in the Tournament of Stars, and he really struggled. The Tournament of Stars, he did not have a hit in 13 plate appearances, struck out in 5 of his, struck out 5 times, but then you really start to see the bat play in game action at East Coast Pro. Now, he did have a ton of strikeouts as well, but when he hit it, it is easy plus bat speed. He has plus raw power, and the ball really just jumps off his bat. He's a unique player because the body is just so loose and limber. He's 6'3", broad-shouldered.
Just so different from his brother. Loose and limber is just not anything that was ever associated with 5'11", 220-pound tank Preston Tucker.
It's incredible. And he should have my last name because he has one of the longest necks out there. And it's
awesome.
And he was the only player who had had an extra base hit at the All-American Classic. He had a double that one-hopped the center field fence. It was 105 miles an hour off the bat per TrackMan. So if he can continue to make contact at a little higher rate, can allow the bat to play in the power, he probably doesn't fit long-term in center field, even though he runs okay. He has enough arm to potentially fit in right field. It's about an average or maybe a tick better, probably average though. But yeah, he's going to be a polarizing guy because kind of like with Daz Cameron, you're not necessarily – you're fighting the expectations that you fought coming in. It's kind of unfair because we don't have that with a lot of the other players in the class.
That's a great way to put it. That's really interesting because he has set his own expectations so high. And playing high school, he's at high school in Tampa. I think I'm getting Plant High School mixed up with some other Florida high schools, but I did see that
there are two Plants. Yes, one I think produced Wade Boggs, and that is not his.
So this says Plant High Tampa is him, but he's a different high school.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay,
or maybe that is the one, but yeah, there are multiple Plants. And with one of the things that makes Kyle Tucker so unique is the bat path. He starts his hands very, very low. Some of the comparisons that have been thrown out there in terms of his stance are Ted Williams and Stan Musial.
Wow.
Because he starts his hands so low, and his bat path is just so flat through the zone. It's really something that you don't see in modern-day baseball.
Well, there's a guy on Twitter who hammers me and Matt Eddy about that all the time, about the low swing path, and I told him during the summer, watch Team USA and watch the, what was the Cal Poly guy's name? Mathias?
Oh, Mark Mathias.
Mark Mathias, who's one of the more interesting, better performing players for the college national team. Maybe not more interesting from a tool standpoint, but he had really low hands. And really, Nick Markakis is the current big leaguer I think of with the flat, with the low hands, flat swing path. And he's never really developed big power. He's kind of always had that kind of fringy tweener power. Certainly works in Baltimore when you play next to a center fielder with a power like Adam Jones has, but that is intriguing that he's that kind of
player. You'll certainly appreciate this because I'll bring it back to John Belushi. Preston Tucker, the nickname that Florida scouts had for him was the Samurai because he also started his hands very low and had a very, very flat swing path as well. And so Kyle Tucker's nickname, of course, has been Samurai Jr. because it is similarly low and flat.
That's awesome. So there's some bloodlines there. That's another segue. There are plenty of bloodlines that are going to be on display in the Under Armour game this Saturday, this Sunday on MLB Network when they show the game. Obviously, there's a Clemens. Every year, there's a Clemens in this in the Under Armour game. I know it's just been 2 years, but Cody Clemens. Let's start off with Cody Clemens. How does Cody Clemens shake out as a prospect? Is he going to be more like Kobe, his older brother, who was the first baseman for Texas this past season, a key part of their Omaha team? Is Cody Clemens more of a grinder, college-type player? That's my first impression of him.
You know, I think that's pretty spot on. One of the things that stood out was he was not on the Area Codes Texas team. So when the pro scouts were evaluating, they did not necessarily put him in that same context, but he does have aptitude for the game. If you saw the Perfect Game All-American Classic, he was playing second base and he made a diving stop in the hole when the game was actually a nice pitching duel back and forth there when there were zeros across the board. He has aptitude for the game, left-handed bat. He probably has the ability to stay up the middle at the college level, and he's just a very good player with present aptitude for the game.
So we've mentioned obviously Clemens, Cameron, and then you've got a couple the other interesting sons of big leaguers: Nick Shumpert, son of Terry Shumpert, who was a veteran utility player, and Cabrian Hayes, son of Charlie Hayes. Now I've always been bringing up Charlie Hayes as the one of the last regulars drafted out of high school in Mississippi who reached the major leagues, but Cabrian Hayes is out of Texas. But also, it just is interesting to read the write-ups when you've seen Cabrian this summer, that it's kind of more of a raw athlete type as opposed to a sort of a big leaguer I thought would be a little bit more polished.
Well, yeah, I think that's something that we've seen develop over the course of the summer. We were fortunate because last year he was on the Area Code team. His body has improved tremendously, and I was very fortunate to get a chance to speak with Charlie about his son's transformation with his body and his work ethic over the last year, and it sounds like he has shed about 15 to 20 pounds. He's been up every single morning swimming in the AM before school and whatnot, and he really has a polished bat. Some of the other tools may not be quite as polished, but he's made a good amount of contact against good competition every single event so far.
Cool.
He's got very quick hands, and he just has a very line drive, gap-to-gap approach. Probably has more power in there than what he's shown in BP just because he takes a very professional BP. He has the arm strength to play third base. The movement skills maybe are not what you'd look for, but he does move well enough to certainly profile there.
And Nick Shumpert sounds a little bit like his old man. Defensive aptitude, athleticism, infielder's a high school shortstop. I guess people are going to want to just see, scouts need to see a little more with the bat, it sounds like, for him to be thought of as more of a first-round talent.
Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, because he certainly shows the tools. And he's someone else, we were fortunate to see him as an underclassman. He's improved tremendously, his body and his speed. And in talking with Terry, it sounds like this is when they really put the emphasis this year on hitting the weight room and getting into their consistent workouts. Because his speed, he was consistently running from the right side about 4-5. You're going to get him 4-2 this summer.
Wow.
The speed has improved tremendously. He's always had defensive aptitude. When we saw him at the Area Code games last year, I think two of the 6 days he made the defensive play of the day. Hmm. He was a defensive standout there. He has the ability to potentially play shortstop at the big league level. He's got the arm strength. He's just a very, very good defender. And the bat, he shows power. He shows a lot more power than a lot of the other middle infielders might. It's just, can the swing play and can he make consistent contact in game action? And so, big events for Colorado players and for northern players like this, where they are seeing, big time velocity. you know, it's very, very important for these guys. And so these are the sorts of players that will get a ton of looks at Jupiter come the fall.
Don't get me too off on my Colorado tangent. But usually Colorado's all about power arms, Clint. So that's going to let me transition into the the part that it does seem like draft Knicks are most interested in are these power arms. And that was one of the big stories of the Perfect Game Classic. I think it's expected that pitching will again dominate this Under Armour game, as it happened at the Perfect Game Classic. You had a shutout there for the first time in that game, in the history of that game, which is now in its 12th season. This Under Armour game has been going on since 2006, I believe it was. 2005, I think, actually, was the first Cape Cod Classic. That's the game that evolved into the Under Armour All-America game. And there's going to be pretty big power arms here as well. Again, Ash Russell is the, to me, is like from the right-handed side, it's like he's the one who stands out. Maybe it's just the mullet, but to me, it is. And this is also a Cathedral Catholic, his high school program there at Indiana, that's got some track record as well. Tommy Hunter was there before his two-year stint at Alabama. And then Dylan Peters, the 10th-round pick of the Marlins this year out of Texas. So those are the two Cathedral Catholic guys, not Brady Aiken's Cathedral Catholic in San Diego. This is Cathedral Catholic there in Indianapolis. Is Ash Russell right now the top prep right-hander, or is he in that? If he's not, who else is in that competition with him?
Yeah, I think he's certainly in the discussion for that. And it's amazing because Indiana is going to have a good high school pitching crop as probably they've had in the last decade or so.
And there have been some guys. I mean, obviously Alex Meyer and Trey Ball are the two guys that jump out to my head as Indiana high school guys. I'm sure I'm missing
Jared Barker.
Yeah, I think so. Yep, 2007, yeah.
And these guys are all big with fast arms. And that's really the thing that stands out with Ash Russell. It's the combination of his size, being a legitimate 6'4", long, lean, rangy build with a little bit of strength to his lower half, and just the arm speed with Ash.
Right.
As a cross-checker put it to me, guys that have that sort of body and that sort of arm speed, those are the guys that play in the big leagues for quite a few years. Now, the complicating factor with Ash is the arm action is not necessarily the prettiest. It's very high in the back and is a little bit of a lower arm slot. But he, even though he didn't fill up the strike zone at the Perfect Game All-American Classic as much as he normally does, he usually throws a good amount of strikes. And his fastball usually sits about 90, 91 to 94, touching 95. Down in Georgia, we saw him in the Worldwood Bat, and he had a complete game, seven innings, when he was 92 to 94, touching 95, broke bats left and right, and maintained that velocity.
That was that's the one I remember reading from this summer where that was like single best outing by a high school pitcher this summer.
It was one of them, yeah. And I think he broke Isaiah Gilliam, who was also a Perfect Game All-American. He broke his bat at least two, potentially three times, run to both sides of the plate. And the breaking ball has depth. Because of his lower arm slot, and his arm slot does tend to wander a little bit, the shape does change. But it shows at least average, if not flashing above average potential.
Well, that obviously gives you something to work on from if you're a scout, you're giving that information to your development staff. If you draft this guy, as he gains strength, as he physically matures to get a more consistent release point and slot to make those things more consistent.
Absolutely.
But the other right-hander, I guess, who's jumped out to me just in reading your stuff is Joe Demers, a guy who's on that tournament, was in the Tournament of Stars here, has some track record with USA Baseball, was on the 14U team a couple years back. It's another kind of physical high school right-hander.
Yeah, he was the only underclassman on the gold medal-winning team last year, and he was a key bullpen arm for them last year, and it sounds like he's going to be a critical arm for them this year, potentially moving it over into the rotation, because he has many scouts that believe his body and his delivery kind of look like relievers, but the thing is that he has a fastball that ran up to 96, the All-American Classic, normally sits in the 91 to 93 range, but he has a legit four-pitch mix, and all four pitches could be at least average, with two of them flashing better. So it's a starter's repertoire from a reliever's body and delivery. But he has maintained his velocity as well as any starter throughout the course of the entire summer at all these different big events, and he's going to be able to get ground balls. He gets a lot of life and run to his fastball. He's going to be a very fascinating guy. I think he could be somewhat polarizing depending upon what the scouts see, because the stuff is good. It's very good stuff, but he's potentially the eye of the holder sort of player.
And the other right-handed pitcher that, and again, you can add others to this mix, but the guy, it sounds like the scouts want to see the most, who will be at this Under Armour game, Joe Demers will not be, Ash Russell will be, but Corey Zangari, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but out of Oklahoma, Carl Albert High, which I believe was Gavin LaValle, was that him this year? So, again, this is a very prominent program in Oklahoma that's won a lot of games, won some state titles. Corey Zangari is a reason for that, I'm going to guess, in recent years. And he says like he's not been on the showcase circuit a lot this summer. He's instead been American Legion ball. So this will be really his national kind of coming out party. So probably, you know, when he walks out to the mound, they'll play All Eyes on Me for Corey Zangari as his welcome music, whether he wants it or not.
Yeah, it's only going to be one inning, but it's going to be a very important inning for Corey Zangari. As John mentioned, he's not been on the showcase circuit. He was supposed to be on the White Sox area codes team, but he plays Legion ball, and their Legion ball team advanced very far, and he was supposed to pitch in the All-American Classic, and that again, you know,
interfered. By Legion ball. Wow,
but he should be here, and he's been a part of three straight state championship winning teams, as John mentioned, on a very prominent Carl Albert team. And the funny thing is, I've looked at his stats from last year. He has not gotten a single inning, at least as far as the records we've found online, on the mound. He's a 6'4", 225-pound, just very powerful guy. He's gotten his time behind the plate. And an area codes game workout earlier this summer, he ran his fastball up to 96.
Wow.
With some guns having 97, although I couldn't confirm 97. But that sort of power stuff, for us to be this late in the summer, for the summer to be winding down, and for scouts to have, you know, so little history with him, he's really going to be a fascinating guy.
Can
we make a trip to Oklahoma next?
Absolutely.
Next spring?
Sounds like we need to. 505 with 11 home runs last spring for Carl Albert High. Began a story on the Daily Oklahoman in Oklahoma City is, yep, he's a catcher, and now he'll be in this game, and there's a change of position for him. So I mean, like, I'm thinking of him as a pitcher, and so this will be the first time, really, that he'll be thought of as a pitcher. And does he hit enough that anyone would consider him behind the mound? And have you talked to scouts who've seen him?
It sounds like he is something of a prospect behind the plate. I'm not sure how much. Most of that is secondhand, so
right.
I think we'll wait and see on that. But most of the people that I did speak with, first or secondhand, believe that, the future's probably on the mound.
And the left-handers in the class seem like they just kind of took center stage at the PG game out in San Diego between Colby Allard and Justin Hooper, who physically couldn't be much more different. Hooper 6'7", 230. Allard's listed at 6'1", 175. But I gotta tell you, Clint. Yeah, he's not even that. Yeah,
and I would guess he's 5'11".
And this is a B in Clint's bonnet is accurate measurements, which is why we need a combine. That's a whole other story. But I gotta tell you, I read about Allard, who just turned 17. Right, was 16
today.
His birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So he was 16, hitting 96 in this game on a big league mound. And I gotta tell you, other than the lack of physicality, comparing him to Brady Aiken. A lot of Brady Aiken similarities. Left-handed, throwing hard, but known more for his pitchability than for the velocity, down to the UCLA commitment. What's the difference besides the physicality, or is he pretty similar to Brady Aiken?
No, he's much more wiry than Brady is. You know, somebody did post that
on
Twitter.
The body's not anywhere similar, doesn't sound like.
I think the changeup is probably the separator from where these guys were last year. And last year, in Brady, in this game, he showed his best velocity entire summer, running it up to 93.
Right.
Last summer, he mostly pitched in that 88 to 91 range. And Colby, this year, even though he has a very thin, wiry build, that he's looking to, you know, get stronger and improve upon, because I think he said he's 175. He hopes to get up to 190 when I spoke with him after the game. His velocity has been 90 to 92, touching 93 across the board at all these events this summer. And then he comes out and had 192, and the rest were largely in that 94, and he had touch 95. Some guns had 96. But yeah, I think the changeup is probably separated for him. He very rarely throws it. When this time last year, Brady showed an above-average changeup, and you know, had a chance to be at least plus, if not better than that. But you're right. There are a ton of similarities between these two.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Not to mention the age. Brady
was young for the class.
He will be 18, I think, next week. He's still only 17, which is just another amazing fact.
It is. There's just too many ways. It's a strange case. Meanwhile, Justin Hooper, pretty unique case, it sounds like, Clint. A guy, it's just very hard to go through history and find high school left-handers who threw 97 as a matter of course. It's also hard to go back and find guys who were 6'7", 230. I mean, this year we found that Tyler Kolick, as a right-hander, He was the biggest high school right-hander that we could find in BA history, of going back through draft history of what we list guys' heights and weights. At 6'6", 250, we couldn't find anybody who had that combination of he was the heaviest, was he
yes,
not?
Yes, he was.
Heaviest listed high school right-hander, high school pitcher drafted. Like, we had Sabathia in 1997 listed at 6'7", 240, I believe. So Hooper's only 230 now, but he's got 10 months between now and the draft. I mean, when you see him pitch, does he look like is Sabathia like the most logical comparison because of that size, or how coordinated is he at that size and this age?
He struggled with his control a little bit of the All-American Classic, but he's fairly coordinated. And the arm speed, he's another guy like Ash Russell. Big and with arm speed that you don't normally see from guys like that. The ball just really jumps out of his hand. It's quite tremendous to see. And with his arm slot, a cross-checker put it best when they said it looks like the ball is coming out of his armpit.
Yeah,
it's really, really tough to pick up. And just to kind of put this in historical context, I spent a good amount of the morning trying to research this with a left-hander who was up to 96 or 97 in the summer, and I reached out to 8 different evaluators who've been decision-makers in the game for a long time, and the only players they could think of who touched 90, 97 or better from the left side during the summer was Scott Kazmir. We have a confirmed 97, and Brian Taylor, he touched 98 in the spring. I don't think at this time we can confidently say what he was in the summer, but
right.
He's somebody who pushed into that range. And I'm also asking evaluators, when's the last time they could remember the hardest thrower in the prep class being a left-hander? That's also another rarity. So
it's very rare. The guys that you have on this list, like an Andrew Miller in the 2003 high school draft class, I don't believe he was – I mean, he entered the year as one of the bigger deals. I mean, Jeff Allison was the high school player of the year that year. Yeah. Didn't give up a run in Massachusetts that spring facing Wood Bats. Obviously had his drug problems after he signed, and that really surfaced after he signed. I do remember Tyler Matzik, a report of him hitting 98 like the week before the 2009 draft. What was he, at Cap Valley High School? I think he's at Capistrano Valley High.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at this list. Just got a chance to see Daniel Norris on Sunday. He was awfully good in AAA, but I don't think he threw that hard in high school. Myers Quigley, definitely a name from the BA past, when Alan Matthews' favorites, well known later in his career for kicking out the window of a patrol car. Have you heard that story? Oh, yeah. He got arrested for something and kicked out the window of a patrol car.
Oh, no.
That's why Myers Quigley, I'm not going to say anything else mean about him. It just didn't work out the way that we thought it potentially could work out for Myers Quigley. We'll work it out that way. We'll leave it there. And then, Madison Bumgarner, another guy, big physical left-hander, who more lived in that 92-93, but always would pop you that 5 or that 7 throughout his high school, when he was really under scrutiny as one of the top players. And of course, was a member of that, to me, one of the epic recruiting classes of all time. Madison Bumgarner, Matt Harvey, Rick Porcello, all in the same North Carolina recruiting class, and they did get Matt Harvey. And all three of those guys have had pretty significant major league success. So pretty interesting class. Hooper will be in this game, in the Under Armour game that we're previewing still. Who are some of the other pitchers who are you looking forward to seeing there? I know you've already seen Kyle Molnar. That's a name familiar to me. We saw him in NHSI.
One of the best outings there.
I was about to say, it just seems like Kyle Molnar is kind of steady as he goes. Average to above average fastball, really good breaking ball, one of the better spin rates on the breaking ball on the
track
band data and area codes. And just a guy with athleticism, some present physicality, some polish. So for me, he's actually one of the guys I know in this high school class. And he's like he keeps on coming to the post and answering the bell whenever he's out at one of these events.
Yeah, he's very athletic, and he's one of the more prominent guys out of California this year.
Does he have a younger brother who's an outfielder? Who was the outfielder on that team?
Blake Sable.
Who's the younger brother of Stephen Sable.
He's a rising junior this year who was at the Tournament of Stars. Yeah, and he's certainly going to be one of the more prominent players of that class.
He was
a left-handed bat with aptitude.
He was pretty interesting looking. I just remember he jumped out at that. But who are some other pitchers who fans should look for in this Baseball Factory game who might light the light on with the radar gun and pitch their way into the first round?
I think if you're going to look for velocity, Bo Burrows is probably the first place we should look after the guys we've already mentioned.
Of course, Texas. We should look in Texas.
Absolutely. And a place that breeds velocity, because he is a student of the Texas Baseball Ranch and Ron Wolforth and everything that they teach there at the ranch. He's been consistently touching 95 and 96 at almost every single event this summer. He's a very athletic pitcher. He's broad-shouldered, 6'2", has a very good body. And one of the things that he's done that's really impressed myself as well as a lot of evaluators is the pitchability has improved with him throughout the course of the summer. You know, he had a disastrous outing at the Tournament of Stars, but then he came back, he started to throw more strikes and more consistent and quality strikes, locating down in the zone. He has a pretty high arm slot, and when his fastball is up, it tends to get hit quite a bit.
Flattens out, obviously. Yeah.
Tremendously so, yeah, especially with his slot. But locating down in the zone more frequently in a one-inning stint, I would expect that we'll see Bo Burrows, like he did just a few days ago, will probably be in that 93 to 95, touch 96 with an outside shot. It may be 97.
Dude, could Cole McKay join him as another Texas big arm? 6'5", 215. We have that. He's touched 94 at times as well.
Yeah, I think he could certainly run up there in the 94-95 range. The thing that stands out with Cole McKay is really just kind of the feel for his off-speed stuff. Even though he has that big physical Texas build that you look to see out of the power right-handers, his fastball is going to sit at his best in the 91 to 93 range. It was down at area codes. It was not in that range there, but he's pitched a lot this summer. And, you know, talking to scouts, they think even though he didn't have a great outing there, you give his arm some rest in the summer, next spring, we'll hear him touch in 95 and 96.
And Luke,
he has a chance for at least a 60 breaking ball, and his changeup shows a ton of tumble, tremendous feel for his changeup, so at least two above-average off-speed pitches with a fastball has a chance to come back up in the one-inning stance, and hopefully with a little bit more rest next spring into the touching the mid-90s.
And I don't mean to make it all Texans, but Luke and Baker's another big physical Texan. We've written about him this summer. You did, especially with winning the Junior Home Run Derby in Minneapolis. But this is another power arm right-hander, hit 95 at the perfect game, All-America Classic on Sunday. Another guy who could light up that radar gun.
Tremendously so. And if you want physicality,
yeah,
Luke and Baker, he's the guy to watch. He's six foot four, I think, officially, and 255, just as strong as Texas can get. And the size of his hands, he practically destroyed my hand. Just the width of his hands, I felt like I was shaking the hand of a defensive tackle. The strength that he has, and as John mentioned, he emerged and went up to the MLB Junior MLB Select Home Run Derby and won it there, and he had an authoritative home run at the area code games. And although he doesn't fit the typical profile of the two-way player that we see, you know, to highlight some of these high school classes, a lot of evaluators are asking whether they would like him better on the mound or as a position player, because he's a well below average runner, but he has so much thump, and the ball really just makes a different sound off of his bat. But on the mound, where he has more experience, he'll run it up, as John said, the 95, and the breaking ball's been inconsistent, but it can show at least above average. And he can pitch with downhill, playing at some sink at the bottom of the zone. He's going to be one of the more interesting players to figure out, just because the body and the physicality, he's in the Kolek sort of mold. Okay. Even though we said that he was a guy that, you know, it was really tough to compare him to, there's no direct comparison there.
Right.
But he's in that family of players.
I like that. I always love my family. The phylum. He's in the phylum of players.
And families.
I like that. Okay, now, so now I'm going to end the podcast with somewhat of a tangent. I got to tell you, just reading through the East Coast write-ups, reading through the area code write-ups, the power and the home runs just seems like it's not as rare as maybe it used to be, especially for the high school guys at Blair Field. And Blair Field hasn't changed. But it feels like the high school players have so much more experience today than their antecedents did 10, 15, 20 years ago. We're like in 1998 when Carlos Quentin was a high school sophomore and he had a home run at Blair Field, and it was like, oh, Carlos Quentin. I mean, like, it was really a big deal. Or when Justin Upton hit one when he was 14 at area codes, these kind of things. Those are stories from my early days at BA that stand out. But now I'm just reading these, and I mean, like, the home runs seem like they come with some commonality. I know part of that is because of the velocity. The harder the pitchers throw, and the more they're trying just to throw hard, if they leave one flat in the zone, it makes it easier to hit one out. But correct me, here's my hypothesis. I felt like the high school players have much more experience with wood bats than they did 10 years ago. And if you're comparing them to the college national team guys or the Cape guys who are using summer wood bats after a spring of using those POS metal bats that just stink. So they're using those BB cores. Clinton just feels like the high school kids have so much more confidence with wood than the college guys do because they've been beaten down by the BB cores all spring. And the as a result, the high school player of today just goes up there looking to do damage more than the college player does. I just feel like that is just, it just jumps out at me when I go to a high school game or I watch a high school game with wood bats compared to, like, the Tournament of Stars, compared to the college.
Seven home runs by seven different players.
Tournament of Stars, it just jumped out at me, watching Omaha games that night and then going to TOS and being like, what? And then you go to the college national team, it's like, what are these guys doing? These guys are just trying to guide the ball. When they're in hitters counts, advantage counts, high school players are up there. Jonathan India was the guy who stood out the most to me. He's like, I'm going to go for mine right now. And he didn't get cheated. He wasn't the only one. And is there something to this, you think? Is this my theory?
I think so. I think the comfort that you mentioned is a great point because Josh Naylor, just to give an example, Josh
Thick
Naylor.
Thick body Canadian.
Yeah.
Thick body is the emphasis.
Absolutely right. He has gotten some physical comparisons to Prince Fielder.
I think he earns them. He jumped out. When you were watching the PG game, you're like, oh my gosh, that must be Josh Naylor.
But man, he can swing it. Plus bat speed, at least plus raw power. But the thing that really stood out when I was speaking to an evaluator about him is he squared off with Lucan Baker in the home run derby. And they were required to use aluminum because you didn't want the high school guys to get up there and try to hit with wood and not necessarily perform on that big stage. And the scout said, oh, he was angry. If he had, and he said so publicly that if he had gotten the chance to swing with wood, he thinks he probably would want it and done significantly better. And I think that is just a perfect anecdote to show the high school player is more comfortable using the wood than the aluminum.
And it's not even close. The wood bats of today, compared to the BB core bats, with the restrictions put on the BB cores, when you're making it out of metal to make them durable, the balance of these bats is just out of whack. They just don't feel right. And a wood bat has much better balance throughout it. The weight is distributed the way it should be. And the metal bat, you can't do it. You have to put more weight basically in the handle and then toward the barrel as well. So it's like, it's just weird. It just feels weird to swing that bat. And you can tell. I feel like you can really tell, Clint, that the high school hitters take more comfortable swings. They're just so much more comfortable with wood bats now than they used to be. And I think they're more comfortable. So I think it's a mentality that the college player has to work his way out of over the course of the summer. And some of those guys, I feel like they almost get to summer college baseball, and it's a relief to hit with wood. And I wish there was something we could do about it. I don't know that we can, but it jumped out to me this summer. I'm wondering, all the college national team that you saw, if it jumped out to you as much as well. But I mean, it's something that's there. Maybe I'm putting a little bit too much on it, too much emphasis. But it really feels like, I feel like confidence is such a huge issue for hitters. If you don't have it, you're just not going to hit.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the magnitude of this, I don't know how much, but yes, it is an effect. It is definitely in the right direction. And sorry, I just want to amend a comment that I said earlier, just to clarify that with Lucan Baker, you know, comparing him to Tyler Kolek or saying that he's in the same family, that was not in terms of velocity or prospect status. That was just in terms of the body and the physicality. Just wanted to clear that up.
Oh, I thought you were clear about that myself. So.
Okay. And just to kind of bring things back around to Under Armour,
yeah,
we received very exciting news just within the past few days that one of the premier athletes in the entire class named Kyler Murray is going to be heading up to Chicago for the Under Armour game. And for those of you who are college football fans or follow the recruiting world, you're probably very familiar with Kyler Murray. He's the number one per ESPN and a lot of different media outlets who do recruiting rankings. He's rated as the number one high school quarterback in the entire class. His father, who actually was drafted in the 11th round by the Brewers and played a season of professional baseball, went on to Texas A&M. Kevin Murray was an All-American there.
Nice.
And so there's bloodlines.
Calvin Murray's nephew. Okay.
Yes, and I mean baseball bloodlines as well with Calvin Murray, the former two-time first-round pick.
Right.
being his uncle. And scouts have not gotten a chance to see a great deal of him on a national level this summer. He was supposed to be at the Tournament of Stars, but that did not come to fruition. And he has electric bat speed, from what I've been told, and is a plus runner. Just the athleticism is obviously what really stands out with him. And so now we're going to get a chance to see him on a national stage. Evaluators are very, very excited for this opportunity.
I got to say, the big thing for Kyler Murray will probably be that workout day on Friday at Curtis Granderson Field, which you need to report back to me on how nice that is now,
yeah.
with the spectacular Chicago skyline as its backdrop. But there's the workout day on Friday at Granderson Field at UIC is almost a bigger deal for him, because it's almost unfair, yep, for him to go into a game and you're going to see nothing but pitchers just airing it out.
Yeah.
So that workout for him where you take the in and out and you take your BP and you run, that'll be a big day for him to perform well, yes, without much and try to act like there's not a lot of pressure, even though that's really where all the eyes will be on him. And the agents can all lay off because Calvin Murray works for Boris Korp. So I'm just telling you right now, if he has representation in baseball, it's going to be Boris Korp. But it's just exciting that an athlete like that's going to be out there.
Yeah, no question. The unfortunate thing is, I believe he has a game Friday, and he is practicing with his team Saturday.
Oh.
So he's coming up just for the game. So thankfully, since it is a night game, you know, everything is going to work out. But what you just said about, you know, all of the workouts, those still ring true. Those will be held at Wrigley. You know, get a chance to see him BP, infield, outfield. Those will be very, very important time to lay eyes on him.
But that's the thing about this event is that, you know, it really is more than just the game and more than what you'll see on TV. One of the guys who was a late invitee was Nick Plummer out of Michigan. And I got to tell you, he's one of the more exciting guys of the summer, it sounds like, Clint. I mean, I don't know if you can call a guy a pop-up guy on the summer showcase circuit, but it sounds like Nick Plummer has been the guy who's made the biggest strides with the bat this summer, where he's gone from, maybe people knew about him, a Michigan commitment. You know, again, Eric Bakich did a great job improving the talent level at Maryland in his short stay there, and I think people have seen the same thing in his short time at Michigan. But Nick Plummer could be that next guy, because it's like the bat has really cut. He just has shown offensive ability throughout the summer.
It's tremendous. Very few scouts on our
He's a Michigan. He's not a Michigan commit. He's a Kentucky
commit.
I apologize.
But you're right, though, because he's actually an early commit to Michigan.
Okay.
So you weren't too far off there. But yeah,
he's
committed to Kentucky now. He's a left-handed bat. Very few scouts on the national level had much history with him. And he steps into East Coast Pro, takes one of the best BPs there, and has a very, I mean, he could be an underwear model. He is just absolutely ripped to shreds. He's 5'10", 199. You can certainly tell just by looking at him that he has a football background. He gave that up just within the last few years.
Hmm.
But very, very physical. And it takes a great BP. And then early on in the event, hits a home run that some scouts have said that they think was one of the better struck and longer hit home runs they've ever seen by an amateur player. And then he has a great week in Syracuse, takes quality at bats, shows a lot of polish at the plate, especially for somebody who is... I mean, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Toledo,
yeah,
Ohio, so less than an hour drive from where he is. And we don't see very many quality breaking balls or big-time velocity, but he handled it very well. And then he goes over to East Coast Pro with a chance, or sorry, to Area Codes with a chance to build on that performance. And we had one home run hit last year at the entire six-day event of the Area Codes. Two pitches in, Nick Plummer hits a very similar shot, a towering,
wow,
home run to right field, and everybody is just giddy because, you know, it was almost Nick Plummer week. And to see him hit two balls like that, and again, just I got a chance to talk to a few high-level evaluators who said they think he's in the discussion for the best high school bat in the entire country.
Wow.
And that thought has come to fruition over the last 2 weeks.
That's
incredible. That just shows the quality of his at-bats. And he didn't finish the Area Codes on the high note that he started it with or out at East Coast Pro. But if you look at the totality of his at-bats, very strong. And he has the ability to potentially stay in center field. We still haven't gotten a great feel for what his run tool is. Its average run time is maybe a tick better out of the box. But it looks like he moves pretty well in center field. The arm probably fits best in center or left field. But, you know, some scouts may question the profile, or did question the profile once they saw the arm and the speed. But as soon as they saw the bat, they said, you know,
yep,
what, some of those concerns have been significantly, you know, alleviated. He can profile on a corner. So if he has a chance to stay up the middle, he could go pretty darn good.
That's he just seems like he's the breakout guy kind of in the summer,
yeah,
really, in a lot of ways.
And then in the...
No, go ahead.
The other one, and this just, again, speaks to the...
I want you to pronounce his name.
Demi Ormoloy.
Okay, that's why I wanted you to say it.
An outfielder from Canada, and we're going to have two Canadians in the Under Armour game.
Oh, Canada. But, I mean, like, this guy, really, I mean, just the thumbnail sketch of him, it's like, okay, we just had a Canadian outfielder in Gareth Morgan get $2 million this year. He seems as physical as Gareth Morgan, but maybe more athletic, certainly faster.
Yes, absolutely so. And he has not been playing baseball for that long. He moved from Nigeria when he was 10 months old. And so the trajectory is just pointing straight up on Demi. Because
he's the Giannis Antetokounmpo of baseball. I just thought that out there because he's the Greek freak. I love Giannis
Antetokounmpo. I'm just impressed that you're able to pronounce it correctly.
Well, when he's since he's Greek, I'm going to have to... he's adopted Greece as his home nation, so I got to come correct when it comes to Giannis Antetokounmpo. But Omoyele, did I get it right?
Yes, sir.
I mean... The other thing that stood out, his name stood out in the TrackMan data. He had inconsistent, but I mean, when he made contact at area codes, it was hard contact.
Yeah, and that was the one question heading into this summer because, you know, with the body and the physicality that he had, being 6'3", 225, he had a major league sort of body as
right.
a sophomore. When
right.
we saw him when he was 15 years old with the junior national team in Canada, and you know, evaluators really just wanted to know how is the bat going to progress because we know that he's a 6'5 runner in the 60. He's got a plus arm, and we know that he's got the power too. I mean, he's got plus pull power in BP. How's he going to play in game action? You saw it start to pick up quite a bit at East Coast Pro, taking good quality at bats, and then he really came into his own at the area code games. As John mentioned, he was one of the TrackMan superstars there. He had two of the 10 hardest hit balls of the entire event, and oh, that doesn't even include the home run that he had to left center field, and the triple that he had off the left center field wall. And he's another one, just like Plumber. The quality of at-bats really stand out.
So
the body, the physicality, and the upward trajectory on the bat, he's a really, really exciting player.
What a contrast between him and Josh Naylor, physically.
Yes.
Right and left, these two Canadian players who really, that's the only commonality they have, as they're both Canadian. Otherwise, they could not be more different. But again, kudos to Greg Hamilton and the Baseball Canada staff, because... Again, when you're drafting one of these guys, if there's a Canadian player who's in that mix, the track record that you get on them to evaluate those players is pretty long because they play with the Canadian junior national team. They play with that 18U team. They're going to go to the Dominican. They're going to play. They're going to go play either in Arizona or in Florida with these JCs. You're going to get to see them against good competition. Yes, they don't have a true high school baseball season. If they're in that 18U program for Team Canada, you're going to see them against good competition. You're going to see them in the spring against those junior college competition or the Dominican. I mean, it's a very unique program, and I just think it's maximized the exposure and the opportunity for those players to improve for all those Canadian players. And you just see consistent success stories year after year. It's really cool.
It's tremendous. And I was fortunate because I got a chance to speak with Demi. And he is a very well-spoken young man, and everything that he could do to praise Greg Hamilton and the junior national team, he went out of his way to do. So certainly, he's somebody that you're betting on the person as well as on the player with that.
Which is also, I think, one of the things that happened with Gareth Morgan. Just talking to Tom McNamara, they really love the makeup there. And I know he's a different kind of guy, but I just remember the Brewers were all in on Brett Lowry at the time. Just his intensity and his ferocity, and you see that as a player. I mean, there are questions about maturity level that have dogged Brett Lowry, but that intensity and passion to play, that's never been a question. So a lot to be excited about, a lot to be interested in. I think it's going to be a good show, Clint, on Saturday's game, which airs on Sunday. We went longer than expected, but we have passion for the high school game too, so... We'll have more, I'm sure, again, as you mentioned, when we do our summer college roundup, Aaron with the Cape. You're doing the Northwoods and a couple other leagues, right?
Team USA, Alaska League, and West Coast League.
I might just have to come in here and moderate and let you guys do all the talking, which I'm sure our listeners would appreciate. Forgive my cold today. I think you're also going to get a JJ and the Bear podcast later this week. So we don't have a fun John and Clint gif, but I sure do love their gif.
It's tremendous.
It's the only thing about Josh Norris that I'm jealous of. So for Clint, I'm John. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.